I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we want to make sure you have the best chance to listen to all the guitar content that's right for you. That's why we have a Patreon. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. A veritable treasure trove full of interviews, mini-series, and a whole extra half an hour episode every week. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Get your nerd on.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Good evening.
And this week we've got tons of interesting and exciting news. There's new stuff and old stuff. There's new brand bosses. And of course, NAMM is just around the corner, so we can... start to expect to see all sorts of new things coming out. No, it's not long at all.
7 weeks
means
till the new year, I think.
It doesn't feel to me like we've had any... There's only been a couple of weeks of like downtime where like loads of new stuff hasn't been being released. And now we're into that period where certainly for the next couple of months, people are going to be... There's going to be sort of all the NAMM stuff's going to start to come out so people can get the drop on NAMM and get people excited about seeing the stuff for the first time at NAMM. All these new things are going to start to come out and they're going to be wicked.
I just have one question. Where does it all go? Like, all this stuff keeps getting made and all these people keep buying it. But who are these people? And how does it continue to exist?
it's not an expanding sort of hobby, guitar playing, is it? I don't feel that it's like it's picking up traction as the years go on. So
absolutely it is. What are we talking about?
Do you think so?
Yeah, no, of course it is.
I think the weird thing
well,
is...
Well, I mean, what's happening is we're buying all the gear.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is as the years have gone on, us three have got better jobs and we've earned more money, and we're the reason why guitars are selling more. It's just it's just all us.
Well, we spoke about my 23 guitars, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
23 and me. I agree, Matt. I don't understand where any of it goes.
I mean, it was like that when we worked in stores, wasn't it? You know, and you'd be selling like... I don't know, on a Saturday. I mean, I remember some busy Saturdays and you'd be doing like 20, 30 guitars. And you'd just be like, every Saturday, to different people.
Yeah.
it's nuts. And you think, how many shops there are in the UK alone? You know, big chain stores doing that, and then smaller dealers that are obviously doing stuff on top. That's a lot of guitars. And when you go to a factory and you see someone like Gibson who are making... Like when you go... You know, when we went to Music Man, for example, and they're like, oh, we make about 50 guitars a day, finished, like boxed. And you see 50 guitars on a guitar rack and you're like, that's a lot of guitar just for one day. And then you think like Gibson makes 700 finished a day.
And when I went to the Martin factory, they said that they finished something like, I think they said 300 in America, and they reckon another 600 in Mexico every day. So that, Martin alone are making like 900.
That is madness.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
And if you think, you know, Brighton isn't exactly a big city, and what do we have? What do you reckon? We've got 4-5 guitar shops in Brighton? Something
yeah,
like that.
Four,
you know?
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. You've got Brighton Guitars, Mud Pie, Badlands.
That's it, I think. I don't think there are anymore.
That's it. Oh, Hobgoblin.
Hobgoblin as well, yeah.
And then... And there's another one. There's Guitar Dave has his little shop. I don't know what it's called now. Yeah. Woody's Music. That's what it's called now.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's it.
They are definitely the five main guitar shops in Brighton right now.
That's it. No others, really.
No others.
Yeah, good day at work today, was it, Joe?
Sure.
But I mean, that's without going too far into this, I just don't know where they all go. Where does it all go? When you go to NAMM, and NAMM is massive, and that's not just like guitar market. You walk around, there's like some guy's like, yeah, I've got this new type of flute, and then you're like, where's all the? He's making all this stuff, and I was speaking to some people that are at Music China, and Music China's apparently like 4 or 5 times the size of NAMM. So if you've ever been to NAMM and how big it is, like Music China's even bigger.
Yeah,
and then you think, but there's 1.7 billion people that live in China.
I wonder.
No, 7 billion people live on planet Earth.
No,
one point seven. Oh, billion. Right, okay.
I wonder.
Just to go back on what you were saying, Matty, about where it all goes is, if you remember earlier in the year, Fender, there was a bunch of research that came out that Fender had commissioned that said that it was something like 1 in 10, only 1 in 10 people who start learning the guitar stick with it. And so that's the thing, is that for every 10 new guitar players, for every 10 people who go out and buy their first guitar, only 9 of them will never pick it up again. But then you'll get another 10 who'll also buy their first guitar, and then they'll never pick it up again either. But the one person that does pick up their guitar and stick with it, they then go on to buy like 7 guitars in their lifetime or something like that. So I think that's the thing.
Is that all?
On average, it's 7, which means that you've got like 4.5 people's guitars there, Joe. Three and a half people's guitars. But yeah, I think it is interesting. It is really interesting about where this stuff all does disappear to.
And you sort of, I sometimes like to think, like, what those people are, how those people evolve as players. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you could follow every one of those people and watch them become like a guitar player and what they buy and all of that. It's just really interesting.
That's not what I thought you were going to say at all. I thought you were going to say, it's really interesting. Those 9 people that bought a guitar and they never played it. I just wonder, what they talk about all day, because
do they even exist?
Well, I just don't understand what you talk about all day.
People?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in like 3 or 4 group chats, and literally, they're all just about talking about guitars. This conversation came up in one of my group chats this week, actually. Just like, what do people who don't play guitar talk about when they're talking in group chats? Like, I. Because all I'm ever doing is screenshotting like terrible guitars and sending them through to other people to have a look at,
I mean, I'm pretty sure I don't talk about anything but guitars. I talk about cats a lot, but guitars or cats, really, and pedals, more guitar related.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, we're not the most interesting of people. Well, with NAMM just around the corner, what do you think is going to win NAMM this year? Because it's got to be something left field. Like last year, we saw the British-made Chapman guitars, which I think was one of the sort of best received things that happened at NAMM. And then, of course, that ridiculous 18-string Ormsby. That probably won NAMM for weirdest thing that was there. I'm excited to see what... Because there's going to be so much new stuff, but it's going to be a much, much more quiet year for Fender, because they released everything last year, literally everything last year. So it's going to be interesting.
I mean, I'm interested to see what Slaparoo do next, to be honest. The one string slap bass.
It's the schlepper is a very important instrument. I think, you know,
they were next to Stonefield, right?
They were near Stonefield. Yes, exactly.
Their stand was always super busy, though.
Yeah, just with people making those ridiculous noises on the on the schlepperoo.
Speaking of weird basses and that, we were listening to Manowar this week at work. There's some news that came out about Manowar, which we shouldn't really talk about, but just one of the people I work with loves Manowar, and we were listening to him, and I hadn't realised that the bass player from Manowar plays a piccolo bass. Do you know, are you guys aware of this?
Is that a tiny bass?
No. It's a bass that is, it's an instrument that's tuned on the octave in between an electric guitar and an electric bass. So it's quite high. It's really weird. You sort of think of Manowar as being, you know, like the loudest band in the world, and therefore it's probably like lots of rumbly low frequencies. But yeah, he's playing a piccolo.
That's so weird.
It's really weird. It's really weird. And I've never seen one before. Joe, I wondered, you know, I've got a bass related query for you.
I've never seen one being actually played in real life. That is completely bonkers. In other weird bass news, whilst we're on it, we were talking about the Strata bass just before. Who was it that made a Strata bass?
Stanley
Clark. You're talking about
Stanley Clark.
There was some interview that he did recently where he said, "I love the Strat bass. I love it so much that Fender's making me one," or something. And I read that.
He loves Stratocasters.
He
likes Stratocasters, but he's a bass player, so
yes,
he's had a bass made that looks like a Stratocaster.
Yes, which I assume is just a custom shop or a master built or something, because I mean I don't know anything about it, but maybe it is happening. I don't know.
I absolutely want one. That's totally cool. I love Stratocasters and play bass. I want a Strata bass. To be honest, there are some things that have sort of ticked that box already. The Burns Bison. That's very Strat-esque.
I don't know about that. I mean, the defining feature for a Strat for me is, you know, it's kind of light and easy to knock about. A Burns Bison is made of five trees condensed through some sort of weird spatial anomaly, which makes it weigh as much as five trees do, but they're a little bit
they were traditionally very heavy. I love that you never get, like, you don't often get three pickup basses though, and it was really interesting because of that, and there were so many pickup options, the different ways you could split them. You could create like a precision bass sound by turning on the lower half of your neck pickup and the top half of your middle pickup, so essentially creating a split P sort of pickup thing, which was super cool. And it had the Wild Dog setting, which was just all three
that everything
on.
Together
that's everything on, and it's just called Wild Dog.
I do remember hearing that, and it is fantastic.
They were great. They come strung with flat wound strings, and you get them in a silver snakeskin hard case. I mean,
at one point, all of these switching options, just thinking of the switching options, all of these switching options at one point were brand new and crazy. And yet we've ended up with the two humbucker, three pickup selector, you know, the three-way selector or the five-way. It could have gone so much worse. We could be having like multiple guitars with just like Wild Dog and all this like yeah you seen that new Strat, it's got it's 9.5-inch radius Wild Dog pickup selections on it. It's just like, we actually managed with some normal pickup selections.
Quite lucky, although robot tuners did also make it into becoming an industry standard. Let's not forget. If 2015 Gibson had taken off, just think, Tronicle could be an industry standard. None of us would need pedal board tuners. We'd just do it all on the headstock of our guitar.
It's funny because they have completely stopped that now, haven't they? There's nothing in the range that has Tronicle. You can still buy Tronicle though, can't you? You can still
I mean, I don't know any details about it, but the last thing I heard was there was like suing and counter suing going on between Tronicle and Gibson. Yeah, so it's I think that relationship has very much gone up in smoke.
See, I thought Gibson bought them, but maybe that isn't the
case. They did. They did. I think do you know what? On the podcast, I don't actually want to sort of take stabs at what I think happened. But an interesting sort of
We'll text about it afterwards.
Good idea.
I was just having a look. Actually, I thought I'd go on.
That's a Patreon tier, isn't it? Like,
hear what we really think about Gibson and Tronicle.
No. That's a Patreon tier. Is like, you know, you pay us 150 grand a month, and we'll let you into our WhatsApp chat.
I was just on the Tronicle website. Actually, the latest version of the Tronicle machine heads, which look like on a Strat, have got a full coloured screen that shows you each individual string, and it's tiny. It's like the size of a normal clip-on tuner.
This sounds great. Let's get them. How much are they? Buy a set.
Can you buy me 23 sets, please?
They actually look. And they've got an app. I mean, that's where I've lost me. It's like,
why is there an app now?
Why do I need an app?
Well, I tell you what you need there is you need to get a sustainiac or something to just constantly play the harmonics of your guitars, and then you just sit down and you just change the tuning on your app, and your guitar will play itself. You wouldn't even have to do it.
That is genius. I'm into that. Imagine that.
You'd be like Steve Reich just sitting in your armchair composing something.
It could be some sort of weird like crowd like performance piece where you just like hand the phone over to random people and they tune the strings for you.
Genius. Speaking of Tronicle and Gibson by proxy, we should probably speak about the fact that Gibson have got themselves a new boss man.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about this, I guess, as soon as the news broke. Because
no, exactly. Probably the coolest named man ever.
Yeah, what's his name? I'm trying to find
J.C. Curley.
J.C. Curley.
Yeah.
He came from Levi's, is that right?
That's right. Which is, don't you, because last year, 2000 and what year? It was this year then, wasn't it? Because 2018, Gibson actually did a denim Les Paul. So what are the chances? Do you know what? It literally, it was just blue.
It was white back, wasn't it? White back and sides.
No, it was just blue. It was they were very, very cheaply made. It was one of the Amazon exclusive Les Pauls.
Right.
It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to getting all the new Gibson finishes, like Stonewash and
Ripped. Well, this guitar's really relics. That's the new Ripped finish, mate. You don't know about it.
What were those Levi's that came out, the twisted ones that were popular in the early 2000s? I wonder if that could be implemented in some
damage, mate.
I was hitching my pants up as I went into a bathroom because
for listeners who don't know, in the early 2000s, we were probably all wearing a brand of jeans called Criminal Damage, which were incredibly baggy, and I imagine we were all wearing them below our
what was that free magazine?
Grebo Flares.
Yeah.
What was that free magazine that used to come with like Kerrang that used to have all the weird like gothic jewelry and clothes in it?
I think I mail ordered something.
I can imagine you being like, oh yeah, I actually was a model in that for a little while, like
with a moustache.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they asked me to put this flaming skull t-shirt on, and like, you know, I got to keep it.
I must love taking
but,
it off.
I don't know how we've managed to end up on baggy jeans instead. Oh well, yes, it was the jean thing. But Gibson, new CEO.
Well, not only that, they've got a new CEO, new CMO, which is their marketing officer, new financial officer, new production officer, and someone new to board the whole directors.
A whole new team, and they've had some very nice promo shots taken of JC and his new team that make it look like a sort of CSI Miami style Photoshop. It's fantastic. But and also, most excitingly, they're namming it this year.
Oh, namming.
Going to be at NAMM. It's right. The return of Gibson to WNAMM.
Well, they were at Summer NAMM, so
yes,
you know.
But they weren't at WNAMM.
No.
No.
Now they'll be at WNAMM.
I was just reading here on one of the articles that he notes that Gibson will emerge on November the 1st with an entirely clean balance sheet.
Wow. So someone fresh. Right, wow. Someone has bailed them out, I guess. I guess that's the creditors. You know?
It was saying here that there was, you know, acquisition of Home and Audio Electronics business pushed it into $500 million of untenable debt. I'm guessing they sold a lot of those brands. I don't know, or something.
Yeah.
Because they had
that
KRK
was the deal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Tascam and all of that.
Yeah. The very microphone company that we use, Neat. Neat Mics. They were a Gibson company.
Don't they not exist anymore?
Yeah, they don't exist anymore. That's why we got these mics cheap.
But yeah, I mean, it will be very interesting. I know that's kind of what everyone's saying, but I just it just you know, it's not often I think you get to see a company go into a brand new phase of, you know, a big company like this to go into a brand new phase of their entire life.
It's gonna be great. Know? I really, really hope they bring back robot tuners. It would be so good if that was the announcement in that. We're bringing back the 2015 lineup. We're going back to a zero fret robot tuners. We're going to have the 7-string width 6-string guitar necks. Oh, it'll be
new
wonderful.
Dust Tiger, new Darkfire. Yeah, can't wait.
Yeah. Heavyweight aluminium flight cases.
Oh,
because didn't Henry say something once that was like, people don't want old guitars. Like, old guitars are for, like, old people or something.
Oh, something like that. Do you think they're going to bring back the Firebird X? Maybe they'll bring back the Tascam Orange.
Well, no, because I think they sold Tascam.
Oh, no. Well, they could just call it Orange then.
Okay.
Imagine that if they did what they did in the 60s, went, no one's buying Les Pauls, man. Discontinue them. Discontinued the Les Paul.
Anyway, we should. There's quite a lot of news to cover, so but we don't really know what's going to happen with it. It's very exciting what's happening with Gibson. I think it's going to be great, and I think post Winter NAMM. I mean, I don't know if that's enough time for them really to get anything off the ground in terms of like maybe a few new limited runs. I'd like to see some of that. I'd like to see an indication of the direction that Gibson will be taking. So maybe a few little bits here and there at NAMM. That would be great. That would be very exciting. Of course, they're kind of bound to the 2019 lineup that was released just before Henry went.
One thing I'd like to see is not a new update every year.
Oh, yeah. Just stop calling them the year name. Just make the standard series, the tribute series, and just have it like that and just run. You know, like Fender managed to not update the standard between like 2012 and whenever this year.
Well, the pros, the American Pro replaced this. Oh, do you mean
that's what I mean, the American standard.
The American standard, yeah, absolutely.
Which is great. What a wonderful amount of time to get out of a single model. It also means that you're not sort of frantically trying to flog off old stock by the end of every year. It would be interesting to see, but I guess see we shall.
Indeed.
Anyway, let's have a look at some news. News. So Matt, I don't really know where I was going with that. Actually, nothing at all. But Ernie Ball. It seems to be the last couple of years. There's been a lot of anniversaries, and Ernie Ball are announcing the 25th year anniversary of the Luke.
Yes. So this guitar actually holds, not this specific one, but the model kind of holds a special place in my heart, because when I worked in my very first guitar shop, we had a second-hand Music Man Luke II, and it was probably at the time...
Before you carry on, I realise I meant to point this out at the start of the podcast, and I didn't at all, but I should point out to listeners, especially American listeners who might not know, but we are very stupidly recording this podcast on fireworks night. So especially for me and Jay, there are going to be fireworks going off right outside our window probably the whole way through this podcast.
I was hoping people would think it was me farting, actually, but
making popcorn. Sorry, I did.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, Matt, continue.
Anyway, so yes, this particular style of guitar, the Luke, holds a special place in my heart because in the very first guitar shop I worked in, we had a Luke 2 secondhand. So they were like the greenish pearl ones with the EMGs. And it was, at the time, I think, was one of the most expensive guitars I'd ever played. And since then, and I think I said when I bought my James Valentine, I'd always loved that Music Man neck. So the Lukes for me, although I'm not a massive fan of this particular model in terms of its looks, I do think that everything they make is absolutely fantastic. And they're celebrating 25 years of the Luke with the 25th anniversary L3. It's crazy to think it's only 25 years. I think he was like their second or third endorsee. So this
I think he was second after Steve Morse.
I believe Steve Morse was the first. Yes.
I always thought Luke was the first. Luke
no, pretty sure it's because I think this. I think Joe. I'll have you know, this was a question in the Guitar Nerds quiz.
It was
from earlier in this year. So thank you very much.
Ah, very well.
And since we went to the factory at NAMM and really saw how these were built, to me every time I see them, I just know absolutely everything that's gone into them and the precise detail that they go into. So the 25th anniversary is in Bermuda blue, really nice sort of like deep ocean blue with a quilt top, limited to 25 pieces worldwide. They've upgraded the fretboard markers, custom
electronic. It is an exceptional quilt top as well, isn't it?
It is, and with a bird's eye roasted, like incredibly figured neck as well. It's just an amazing looking guitar. And I think if you're into Steve Luke, you're into that sort of Luke body shape and you want something a little bit special, this is definitely one worth having a look at. And this one has a slightly different pickup configuration. This is a brand new bridge humbucker with extra hot output paired with two classic cutlass single coils. So usually on the L3 you've got two humbuckers. This is the HSS, which I actually think is quite nice. I think it's nice having the single coils in the neck position.
Definitely, this makes this guitar absolutely super versatile. I'm really into this. I'm not really into the top, but I do love the look.
Yeah. So just to give a bit of context, this guitar came out 25 years ago. That makes it 1993, meaning it coincided
the year Jurassic Park came out.
Yeah, the year that Jurassic Park came out, and also the year of Toto's eighth LP, Kingdom of Desire was their eighth LP, featuring such absolute bangers as "Don't Chain My Heart" and "Two Hearts." And Kingdom of Desire.
They really like hearts.
Yeah, there's no other heart songs on there. But yeah, that was Toto's first record. First record. That was their eighth record, and it was their first record in 5 years. After the relative success of their seventh album, The Seventh One, which was their second most popular record of all time. So there we go. Little trip down memory. I actually hadn't realized just how long Toto had been a band. I mean, their first record came out in 1978. Yeah. So
they've,
that's
they
a lot of Toto.
They were a session band, basically, weren't they? They were the session band. And then they went, we're so busy in the studio all the time playing for other people, we're basically writing our own songs at the same time. And then that's when sort of Toto went in and sort of did a record, and it's sort of all gone from that. But yeah, 76 to 2008, two-year hiatus, 2008 to present. And I think they were probably a much bigger deal in... I don't know, I guess maybe they are a big deal over here. They're probably a bigger deal in America. Than they are in the UK, but I mean they've had some pretty big hits.
Steve Lukather's discography is absolutely
it's bonkers,
ridiculous. It's so long. There are so many records that he's played on. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I think he was like, you know, the go-to session person.
I reckon he just lived around the corner. I reckon that's what it was. He just lived closest.
Just get Steve in, he's close. Yeah.
He's just always down the boozer across the road.
Well, I'm just scrolling through the discography now. In alphabetical order, it is absolutely insane.
Well, anyway, speaking... we weren't really speaking of NAMM, but, you know, speaking of brands that are...
good segue. You can do this.
It wasn't great, was it? It wasn't great segue.
You can do it. You can do it.
All right, here we go. Speaking of brands that are releasing full lineups of guitars ahead of NAMM, enter Schecter. That's right, Schecter have announced their full 2019 guitar lineup, and it looks absolutely banging. Now, Schecter, I have felt in the past, maybe they've been slightly eclipsed by ESP and of course Ibanez, as in that sort of large brands that make modern, often metal-edged guitars. But this 2019 lineup is absolutely cracking. I'm really excited about it. In fact, we saw some things come out last year that were sort of indicating that they were getting more outlandish with the instruments that they were making, or modernizing, for want of a better word. I think maybe some of their guitars were quite traditionally metal.
I just think we're seeing brands move away from
trad like, metal thing. Well, I think metal's evolving quite a lot. It's becoming much more fusion orientated at the moment. I think the guitar companies are reacting to that.
But I mean, if you see a lot of metal YouTubers, for example, like, you know, Rob Scallon or, you know, Pete Cottrell, all those guys, they're all sort of using Chapman. And I think that's definitely a brand that moved away from the traditional metal-looking image. And obviously, Rabir's got a signature and...
Yeah.
Those guitars, you know, there's like natural wood finishes. I mean, even if you look at Ola England's Solar range as well, I wouldn't necessarily say that they were like totally metal guitars, you know. Well, when I think of a metal
pickups,
when I think of a metal guitar, I think of like a shiny gloss black ESP or something with some sort of blood or skulls on it.
I think we've moved away from that, but yes, satin finishes have become very popular. Obviously, things like extended range, fan frets become very popular. Passive pickups are making a big comeback in metal, although, you know, active still sort of certainly has its place, and we see the Sustainiac featuring a lot throughout Schecter's lineup. But yes, it's kind of this thing. Lots of burl and that sort of natural wood finishes, and this thing that I think Ibanez kind of popularized because it was more a boutique guitar feature a few years ago. But the I don't know how you'd describe it, Matt. You described it earlier.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
earlier, like the bevel top. So yeah, you get you've got the bowl top or the flame top, which is then carved away into like a bevel where you then get the natural body wood underneath.
Yeah. And it looks fantastic. It's such a unique and interesting look. And certainly if you like, and also I think this is doing the important job of making these guitars more acceptable for people who aren't necessarily metal musicians as well. If you just want something modern that looks you want something that's not retro, you want something modern that looks really
modern.
I think expensive. They look well built. And these guitars kind of tick that box. But they also had the Nick Johnston, which they released last year,
yeah. I think it was last year, maybe two years ago,
and now that's having some upgrades for this year, and is going to, it will be introduced on the market in a couple of tiers. I believe there are a couple of tiers. 14-inch radius,
very flat.
that is incredibly flat.
The one I like the most out of these is the V1 Apocalypse, which is a kind of offset's not the right word, but it looks a bit like a flying V, but one, the top horn is slightly longer, and you've got really fantastic level of access towards the not that I ever need to go out there, but there's really fantastic access up at the top end. It looks cool. It looks like something out of Fallout. It looks like a guitar that has survived a nuclear holocaust. And I have to say, looking at this, I reckon it probably would. It's made of swamp ash, so the guitar is probably a million years old already. set neck, glow in the dark markers. I think it's kind of like an anodized. What does it say about the plate?
It looks like rusty copper.
Yeah, like a kind of rusty anodized type finish. It looks great. I think it looks absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I've always liked these kind of like big statement shapes. I've never really been into really sort of spiky, aggressive shape guitars. But this, I think, with the sort of rounded edges, looks really, really nice. I think it's cool they're doing something a little bit different, you know?
Yeah.
Because for a long time it was Schecters were just, okay, here is a kind of Super Strat and here is the Sinister Gates. And like those were the two kind of shapes that they were running with. And so having a number of different shapes like this, I think is really cool. It's very interesting to see what they do with them.
Absolutely. I think my favorite thing in the range was the Reaper series. Which is available in a 6, a 7, or an 8 string. And in the 7 and 8, they are fan fretted as well, or multi-scale. And also, they're available with a sustainiac in the neck or not. And they're doing a hardtail and a Floyd Rose system option on there. I much prefer the headstock on the Reaper series. The headstock that Schecter generally go for, the sort of three on either side, and it sort of tapers at the top. I've never been into headstocks that taper in. I always think they should go out. Basically, Gibson got it right and just copy that as much as possible because that's the best looking headstock. But
what they've got with this as well is they've got that kind of indent that has been really popular recently.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that companies like Fano have been doing, and I think Friedman did it on their guitars as well. And what was that guitar company that we couldn't pronounce the other week?
Yeah,
Balaguer.
Yes, those guys as well. It's really popular to have that slightly recessed portion of their headstock on a 6 in the row, and these on the Reaper set you get like a reverse headstock, which also makes loads of sense for metal to have that extra length on your low strings as well. Yeah.
Just looking at these the Reapers, the sustainiac, is that only available with a Floyd? Because looking at the lineup that's here, there's the hardtail Reaper, the Reaper with Floyd, or the Reaper with Floyd and Sustainiac.
Yes, so, it might well be the case. I'm just having a butcher's through their press release, and on there it just says also available with a Stainiac.
Oh, okay. Also important to point out, bunch of lefties as well, which is cool. The Reaper, the standard Reaper, the Reaper with Floyd, the Reaper with Floyd and Stainiac, and the 7-string multi-scale is also available left-handed.
Wow, that's cool.
So yeah, cool selection. That's really cool.
Hipshot hardware throughout as well. So yeah, I'm really impressed with this series.
Yeah, I think it's that real modern metal Ibanez, Kiesel, now Schecter, you know, Chapman. They all sort of cover that sort of same sort of area, and you've just got a wide choice of specs, colours and designs to choose from now. And they'll do everything from, you know, low gain stuff to high gain stuff, and I think the passive pickups are going to be a little bit more dynamic. I like the option of Sustainiac. That's probably one of the only commercial guitars I can think of with a Sustainiac option in general.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be really interesting to see how these are received at NAMM and the impact they have on that scene as well. Interesting that they haven't put forward a headless model. Not necessarily they should. I know Chapman haven't either, but just because that seems to be an ever-growing popular thing to do.
Yeah. I guess it's just retooling of machines and...
Of course. You've got to be set up very, very differently.
Yes.
Really cool. Really cool lineup of new guitars. Speaking of new guitars, we should talk about some old guitars. That is my strongest segue yet. Jay Cross, over on Mark Packham's thing, Reverb.com, some guitars have gone up for sale.
Yeah, so Sonic Youth have joined the long line of bands who are selling all of their clobber on Reverb in one go. And I tell you what, some of the stuff that went up there was just absolutely ridiculous. So a Koa Body Travis Bean guitar that sold for $8,500, a Firebird.
Oh my God.
Yeah, a Gibson Firebird that sold for $8,000.
What was the Firebird?
It was a... it was a Firebird? I don't know, I'm just having a look at it now. Fantastic radio. I do apologize.
Yes, absolutely.
Doesn't say.
What's interesting is all this gear is still is very much all still covered in all the stickers, and some of it's broken. That Travis Bean, hadn't they removed all of the controls except for the volume, so it only has,
oh yeah, quality,
and it just has holes in it. Like there's the P bass that's for sale. Obviously, the scratch plate had broken at some point, and it's just got some duct tape over the lower part of the scratch plate to keep it.
Loads of the amps have got spray paint designs on them. There's a couple of super reverbs with really nice really nice tasteful spray paint on there. There's an original Klon Centaur which sold for $3,000, which
$3,000.
I can't imagine that's going to do much for stabilizing the second hand Klon market. But yeah, good grief, that is some price. He probably I bet Thurston Moore bought this in 1996 for $200. He probably bought it for $100 and has just seen a huge return on his investment for that. But absolutely quality. What I wanted to do was I had a quick look on the front page. So there was over 250 things for sale in total. And on the front page, there's 24 products. I sorted it high to low in terms of price. And out of the 26 most expensive products, which range from that Travis Bean that went for nearly $9,000 down to an Epiphone, which sold for $1,000, everything except for the Mutron has sold. So yeah, a Mutron biphase. Now I don't even know what that is. But yeah, I mean, it looks bonkers. I'm actually really surprised this hasn't sold, because it seems like the sort of thing that people who were Sonic Youth fans in the 90s and have grown up and like have got a little bit more money to throw about themselves now. It absolutely looks like the sort of experimental waffle that people would throw some money at. So yeah, I guess I think the thing that's interesting is that this really doesn't appear to be going away. This idea of bands selling their gear in one hit like this. I don't really know what Reverb get out of it. I guess they get a bit of traction, and I suppose they're getting the listing fees as well. But you know, it's cool. It seems to be a cool project.
Absolutely.
One
of my favorite things that I saw on there was a copper sparkle Ibanez Talman with a Bigsby that had the arm looks to have been torn off. So it's just, you can't use the Bigsby and it's a nightmare to restring, but whatever.
So, the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So oh yeah. And it really, yeah. Go on, sorry, Matty.
I was going to say, here's one. If there was, maybe this is a question for the group or maybe it's a question for later on, but I mean, for me, I don't know what band it would have to be to put something on Reverb for me to go, I have to buy that. I mean, is there anyone that you'd go, if they put something online for a band that I really liked,
yeah,
you'd have to buy,
yeah,
it.
If Omar Rodriguez Lopez put up, yeah, you know, one of his Ibanez RRL ones, I'd definitely buy that. That was a great guitar. I don't know why I didn't buy the one that I got him to sign.
I've actually got a DD3 signed by him in the office.
Oh yeah, that was possibly from the same show, wasn't it? It was when he was playing with Bosnian Rainbows in Brighton.
Yeah. Was that the one when they only had two songs, but they still managed to play for an hour?
No, that was a different band. That was his punk band that he had. I've forgotten what they're
didn't
called.
They, wasn't Flea, didn't Flea play bass
that
on that?
Was, yeah, he did play bass in it, but Omar Rodriguez Lopez's younger brother played bass.
Live.
Live.
Yeah.
So he's the bass player from the Marquees.
Wasn't Ed O'Brien or Johnny Greenwood involved in that as well? There was some weird... I'm sure there was a Radiohead connection as well.
Weird.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
I'm not sure.
I actually don't think there's anybody that I would go that bananas for on buying their gear. I really can't think of anything. I mean, in terms of like someone who's achievable and someone who would actually do it. I'm not... Yeah, I don't know. And I think it's down to the fact that most of the guitars that they're selling on here, don't get me wrong, there's some really cool stuff on here, but it's stuff that I think I would want to not spend the premium and just buy a normal one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, if you are a super fan, like for example, the Lee Ronaldo prototype for his Jazzmaster was in there, and that's really cool. That's something that's really nice for if you're like a super fan of.
I was seeing the prototype stuff. Like it was the Chris Shiflett thing. It's like, I'm not a massive Foo Fighters fan, but the prototype of the Chris Shiflett, I'm like, that's a cool guitar.
That was a fantastic guitar. What explain what the Chris Shiflett was for listeners, Matty?
That was it was based on a custom Tele. But it was like a normal Tele shape with normal humbuckers. It was two Seymour.
So instead of the wide range humbuckers, it was normal humbuckers.
Yeah.
Still the 72 plate.
Yeah. With a rosewood fretboard.
Yeah. And it was a perloid guard. And it was quite a nice colour as well. I can't remember what the finish was.
It was just a white. I think like a pearl white or a white. Right. It was a great looking guitar. And actually a really nice playing guitar as well.
Did they just release those as Mexicans, didn't they? So they were quite a reasonable price as well, I seem to remember.
Yeah, I don't think they were much. It's one of the nicest sort of signatures I remember. What's his name? Graham Coxon, I think, is one of the best signature Teles Fender have ever done. But yeah. That was an awesome guitar.
Yes, absolutely. Matt Knight, talk to me about cab simulators.
Oh, well, there's a lot of them to start with. A lot of people going down the street, because I think a lot of people are trying to come up with, you know, the next Sans amp or the next solution for playing at home, the next solution for recording at home, because I think we're seeing people make great recordings from a home studio. I don't think you need, you know, I was talking to some people about sessions they did 30 years ago when they were being whisked off to LA and doing massive sessions, and you know, there was, you know, thousands, hundreds, tens of thousands of pounds getting, you know, splashed around, where people now are like, can you just record it at home and then send it over to me, and then I'll mix it at home in my home studio. And you know, a lot of people like myself live in a small flat, so you need like a better recording solution. And this company DSM Noisemaker, which are relatively new, I've checked their website, they are sort of, they have a bigger version. The mini version is now in like a prototyping stage, and you can pre-order it for a small fee. It's like a mini Moore-sized version of a cab sim and a power amp. So there's no IR loading or anything like that. It's all in an analog world. So very similar to the old Tech 21 guitar Sans amps. Four controls which cover things like texture and resonance of the cab performance. But then you also have an overall output and an amp gain as well. So you've got quarter inch out, and you've also got an XLR ground lift as well. So it's a really nice all-in-one like mini guitar package to stick at the end of your pedal board for recording. I actually think it's great. Yeah. And especially now with companies like, is it Moore doing all of the preamp pedals? I mean, there's a great way of just building basically a tiny amp onto your pedal board.
Yeah, absolutely. For people who still want to use analog pedals, I think this is a fantastic solution, because of course a lot of the amp and cab sims that are coming out are part of big box units like the Headrush or the Helix. And you know if you don't want those things, but you still want, you know, the ability to silent record, then what could be better than a mini pedal sized version of this?
That was always the great thing about the old guitar Sans amps, but they had all the dip switches, because it was all in an analog world. It's sort of, you know, they'd created their own sounds and built them into these boxes. You're not expecting just a digital hard drive that you just load your sounds into. You know, they've actually sat there and physically created the circuits to give a power amp feel that they like the sound of. And I really like that. It feels like there's a little bit more craftsmanship involved than effectively just creating something that, you know, puts out a digital version of it or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. A really cool like alternative solution. I didn't see anything on price for this.
They are on the website now. So they've done, like I said, they've done a deluxe one for a while, which is a slightly bigger version with a lot more options in terms of the power amp, which is $269. So if you want the smaller version, a little bit more.
Is that US dollars?
That's US dollars. So the pre-order price right now is $135.
Oh, mate, that's great.
Yeah, I think it's very good. They're available in stores from December, pre-orders shipping towards the end of November, according to their website.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yes, indeed.
Now, speaking about, I was segue like this today. I don't know why my segue game is terrible. Speaking about Sonic Youth that we didn't just speak about, but spoke about the one before, and prototypes, and then the shiflets. So we were talking about signature models.
I honestly cannot believe you didn't do this after that. I was listening to it and I was like, he's gonna be really annoyed when he realizes he's missed out on a great segue.
I did think about doing the segue, but then I realized it would mean that you would have two news pieces in a row, and it would throw everything out.
No, you're right. People need a rest. The upper frequencies in people's ears, they just need that little bit of a rest.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But talk to us about new signature models, J-Cross. Something Fender are leaking something gradually and slowly.
I assume you're talking about the press release that went out this week about the new Jimmy Page guitars. Oh,
at least I would hope so anyway.
Yes, I was indeed.
So yes, so there is a little bit of an early leak. There are a couple of custom shop models coming out next year, which is really exciting. And that's all I can say about it, because that's
So we know that it's going to be a Telecaster, and we know it's obviously a Jimmy Page Telecaster. It's going to be interesting to see how this comes out. Whether it's like a standard line model or something very high end. I'm very excited to see it, because there are a couple of old like live performances of Jimmy Page using his Telecaster, and I always thought it sounded absolutely amazing. I saw those videos when I was quite young, and he used to do that thing where he'd bend the strings by applying pressure just above the nut. It was the first time I'd ever seen anyone do that, and I just thought it was super cool. There's that old black and white video of him playing that telly that he had the design on, which of course, if you see any color photos of that telly, it's actually way less tasteful than it looks in the in the black and white video. But I'm really excited to see what happens with this.
I think it's really interesting, because the announcement that this came out to coincide with the 50th anniversary of Led Zeppelin. The 50th anniversary of Led Zeppelin.
That in itself is bananas. It's so crazy to think, you know, bands like that and Pink Floyd and Clapton and those people have been like through so much of like musical history.
Yeah.
That is, you know, 68 Zeppelin formed. You just think, man, amazing, absolutely amazing to be in a band then and still be talked about now, probably more than ever.
Absolutely. Well, it'll be really exciting to see. Obviously, we can't say any more because
you don't know anymore.
we don't know anymore. Yes, absolutely. It'll be really exciting to see what happens with these. And actually, we're gonna take this, because it is so exciting. We're going to, I should have pointed this out earlier on the podcast, but we're going to take this as an inspiration for this week's Patreon episode of the podcast, where we're going to be talking about signature model guitars and picking out a few of our absolute favourites from the years gone by. But yes, that should be exciting. Just one more piece of news this week, and it's from a little boutique amp company. Matt, this is really cool, but also really weird looking.
Yeah, J. Chester Amplification, a brand I don't think we've talked about before, have released an amp called the Wave Walker. Really awesome, like ocean blue, sonic blue, Tolexed, Fender style amplifier, I guess you could say, with wave graphics on the back panel.
So weird.
You know, you've got the Fender black face amps, or the silver face era, or you know, tweed. This is the wave era.
It looks like a cheap kitchen worktop.
The amp looks great. I must admit that graphic on the back is not necessarily appealing to me. It has airs of ukulele brand, some sort of weird ukulele brand about it, but it does look, in terms of the colour, I think it looks wicked. 13-watt amplifier, inspired by the band Citizen Way and their latest single, Wave Walker. I think that's probably a weird reference that not many people would necessarily get. Built-in digital reverb rather than an actual spring reverb, but an all-valve-driven 6V6 amplifier with a proper rectifier valve as well. Custom 12-inch green brace ceramic speaker, mercury magnetic transformers, which are absolutely superb transformers for amplifiers, and then £35, making it easy for gigging. But £35 does not sound particularly light. but then again, it is a combo. Price wise, Map price in the US is $17.99. So actually, it is a little bit lower than some of the other boutique competition that it will be coming up against.
And it's certainly following the, you know, the, very much the trend of little amplifiers like this today. 13 watts, single 12. You know, cool Tolex.
I'll tell you what, they, talking of cool amps, so they have a series called the JC series, and they make one called the JC5, and there's one on their website that is like, it's white, but someone's dropped a load of paint on it. So, yeah, it's just like, do you remember the Splattercaster from Fender? It basically looks like that, but an amp. It looks like a... some sort of paint and decorator's radio.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like.
I guess I always just think of, and I see a lot of like builders and painters decorators on the London Tube in the morning. It looks like the jeans that they usually wear as well, because they're like, going to a painting job, I'm not going to put my fresh Levi's on until Mr. Gibson starts handing them out for free. But yeah, they actually look like cool amps. Again,
they
I don't
look
think
great. They do it as a 50 as well. They do a 210 50 watt version of the JC, also with this with the sort of painter and decorator finish.
Painter and decorator finish.
But I'm really into it. I really like it. I mean, it's a little bit cold play, but I think it's still cool.
Yeah, I just it's a shame that I don't think we're necessarily going to see these in the UK.
No, which will be a shame, but hopefully they'll be there at Winter NAMM. They certainly were at Summer NAMM.
Yeah, that would always be nice.
Okay. I think with kind of boutique amp companies, it's just so much more difficult because they are, you know, it's a totally different voltage. In the USC is 110 and over here it's 230. So need to make a completely different amp. It's not like a guitar or a pedal or whatever.
Yeah, that's why I mean some companies obviously have switchable transformers, but they you know, transformers like the heart of an amp, it does change the way an amp feels and responds, and why a lot of companies build amps for that particular country. And then obviously if you go to Japan, where things like this are also really popular, they run on a different voltage as well, so it becomes very, very tricky.
I think Japan's 110 again though, isn't it?
No, it's 100.
Oh, okay. I wonder if 110 would work because...
No, it does not.
Oh, okay.
No, because I bought some gear back from Japan and I was looking at some power transformers. I spoke to a friend of mine who sells a bunch of old Japanese stuff and he's like, yeah, you can't use American transformers.
Oh, right, okay.
Very
interesting.
Very risky.
Interesting.
Denied. Oh, well, that brings us pretty much up to time on this week's podcast, but as I said, we will be continuing over on the Patreon edition of the Guitar Nerds podcast, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad free and early sometimes. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus features and mini-series. Mark Packham has started his own new solo mini-series called A Very Special Episode over on the Patreon. So definitely if you're part of the $5 or $10 tier, go and check that out. $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honor of having your name read out in a single breath. That's right, by me.
Hang on, I've got you some backing music. Okay. I haven't listened to this, but I think it's going to be all right. Okay, wait.
All right. I'm ready. Adrian Day, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Ken Sayer, Matthew King, Stephen Conrady, Gordon G, Richard III, Marin Peters, Sean Arbo, Christopher Wolfman-Chapperson, Robert Cousins, Rob Cruz, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Avedon, Ernie Cooper, Nate Nagel, Ross Edwards, Christopher Francis, Robbie Carter-Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Every James Baker, Ryan McDermott, Ron Coyer, Lake Island, Aaron Sherman, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lucent, Robin Smith, Hans Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Rob Nordwick, Steve Merkle, Mark Cross, Carlos Manta, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Toms, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clan, Moon Grimmett, Paul Thompson, Colin Anderson!
There you have it. Hey, good. excuse me.
Bless you.
Thank you. I was really disappointed because that I looked up bad Stairway to Heaven cover, and that was what came up. And actually, that wasn't too bad. I was really hoping for like comically bad. That's what I wanted. Was really really terrible version of it, but it didn't happen.
Oh well, you should have just played it.
I'm so far away from even being able to do a comically bad version of Stairway to Heaven.
Well, there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That's it from us for this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.